Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. This week, I'm putting out my interview with the incredible Charlene McKenna. She's just one of my favourite actors. She's been recently in Peaky Blinders, which I'm sure you've heard of and love. I used to watch her in a TV show called Raw in Ireland, and I just fell in love with her. She's really, really relatable. And when I met her in person, it was like, oh my God, here's another person who I feel like I've known my whole life, even though I've met her like 5 seconds ago. We had such an incredible chat about anxiety. I just related to her on so many levels. We talked about fear conditioning. We talked about this whole thing of asking ourselves, what if? And she says, I know by now that if a question starts with what if, it's usually my anxiety talking. And that was a huge lesson for me to take from her and bring into my day every day. So I know for sure you're going to laugh, you're going to relate to Charlene a lot, and she has some really, really good advice. And yeah, just enjoy it, and always appreciative of the feedback and the positive reviews. Obviously, you can give me negative ones if you like. And if you haven't yet found Owning It, the book, or the Confidence Kit, they're available on Amazon or in select stores, so I'll pop a link in the product description. Thank you. Obviously, I'm so thrilled to be joined by Charlene McKenna here in New York City. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a bit of background noise because we're overlooking the Manhattan Bridge.
Yes.
But it's quite nice and peaceful today.
It's lovely.
Which is always nice when you're someone who has anxiety to have something nice to look out at. So we were connected by your friend, Brina, who just said, you girls have to chat.
Yeah.
And I had randomly walked by you on the street.
On my birthday.
Yeah, on your birthday. And I was like, oh my God, mom, it's Charlene McKenna. And we were like, oh, we just loved. But we used to like all sit down and watch Raw at the same time. And my boyfriend who lived in the, we would text while we were watching it. Like, we were all obsessed. Oh, also my brother, Daniel Foran, told me to say to you that he stayed in your parents' B&B and thought they were the loveliest people in the world, and he wanted to adopt them as his parents.
They're very cute.
Yeah, he was going to a wedding and he said, no, make sure you tell Charlene that now.
That's so cute. No, everyone who stays, because the B&B is like not like a regular hotel, it is like staying in someone's house, and then mommy and daddy become everyone's parents.
I know.
They're like, do you need your shirt ironed? Yeah. What time's the wedding? Well, we'll drop you down. Do you need a lift to the bus? And people are like, what is there, are they taking the piss? But yeah, they're everyone's so mom and dad.
So obviously I knew you from seeing you on the Late Late Show, seeing you on TV, seeing the news about the new show and everything that's happening. But I didn't know that to the extent to which you were very like me with your anxiety.
Very anxious.
Anxious Annies. And when literally we got together just a few minutes ago, when the world was conspiring against us, we sat down, and I just feel like I've known you my
whole
life.
How many emails?
40. I feel like as soon as we started chatting, I was like, oh my God, even though you're in a completely different like job, or you know, we've led completely different lives, you just get it.
Yeah.
So I suppose for people who maybe similar to me didn't know that you struggled with anxiety,
yeah,
what is it like for you? Do you feel like you've always been an anxious person?
Yes. I have always, but I didn't know what it was called. I think loads of people still don't know what it's called. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, but I was like 27 or 28 before I was like, this thing has a title. Mm-hmm. It's Googleable. There's a whole world out here. But yes, I think I was anxious from day dot. As in very, yeah. very, very young. I look back now at all feelings I had, and I now know that they were all anxiety, but I just didn't know.
And how did it manifest as a kid for you?
It would through different things. I used to just think, oh, there's that feeling, and it was like creeping over, and through some backpedaling through therapy and stuff, I sort of realised that it would come after times where I felt really happy.
Okay.
I think, however, my psychology formed, because I think when I get really happy, it's the terror of that's going to go, that's going to get taken away, or I'm going to get left, or someone's going to die, or that I don't deserve it, that you shouldn't be able to be this happy. Like, what? So there was that, and then when I was a teenager, when I was a child, I choked on a sweet. I think it was about 3 or 4. And it was actually we used to have mushroom houses at the time, and it was one of the mushroom pickers did the Heimlich, I guess, saved me. It was an apple drop. I'm still terrified of circular hard sweets. So then it would manifest in different ways, because then when I became a young teenager, I thought I was everything I would eat, I was going to choke. Mm-hmm. So just wildly irrational fears.
And so we spoke about this before we mm. recorded, the reason why that would have lodged in your throat, but lodged in your in your memory, was because you were able to have a fear response and yes. have a bad memory sort of store in your brain
exactly
before you were able to rationalize it.
Yeah.
Which is why it's something that still would bring up a fear response for yes. you. And I think that's happening people left, right and center.
Absolutely.
Where they don't realize that something as a kid that may have seemed so innocuous.
Yeah.
You know, obviously choking is terrifying, but yeah. for me, like, I talk about my grandparents dying and
yeah.
things that I was frightened.
But smaller things can do.
Yeah, like really small things, and it's just something just kind of slots yeah. into your brain, and then it can kind of come up again for you later on yeah. in life. So, like,
and I think everyone has that, not yeah. just people with anxiety. But it's just to the what degree?
Yes, because it's a whole spectrum. And
there's a great thing that I heard, which really I went And anyone who knows a lot about psychology will know this: that there's the three. There's you as a baby, mm-hmm. then there's the reactive baby, as in how you reacted to situations, circumstances when you were a baby or a child. And while those reactions are very reasonable for a child, you've lodged something that's the same reaction you now have as an adult. Mm-hmm. I nearly said an adult. You've been too long in your...
Oh my God.
As an adult. No. And so then there's the formulated, I think it's called the formulated adult. Or in layman's terms, what it means is when that fear response is triggered, it's the child's reaction to it that's triggered.
Yes.
And what we need to learn, particularly if you suffer a lot with anxiety, is to know that while you're experiencing it in your adult body, that happened, that's a child's reaction, not mm-hmm. your adult. And your adult person is actually totally capable. Mm-hmm. Your adult self, like, has got this to,
yeah.
you know, put an Oprah spin on it. And when we have these, and people, and this is why I'm saying it's not just about anxiety. If people are wildly angry or wildly... you know, something has a real strong emotional reaction, that's triggering something to that child mm-hmm. that is not the adult.
Yeah.
And it's about learning to separate that and to allow, I mean, it sounds hippy-dippy, but to allow your adult self, your formulated adult, mm-hmm. to comfort that child.
Yes, and just take back control
and refigure that out.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I talk in the book about that being sort of like so the adult is the prefrontal cortex mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the child is the amygdala. And when we're worn out and we're stressed out for long periods of time, and maybe nothing that bad has to happen, but the amygdala gets overstimulated and suddenly that just takes over.
Yeah.
And then your prefrontal cortex, the adult, is like, oh, fuck this. Like, yeah. like it can't rationalize.
Yeah.
And now the amygdala is running around trigger happy and yeah. suddenly feeling yes. fear in situations that it never would have felt fear
yeah.
before. And when you put labels on it like that, whether yeah. it's, you call it a kid or whether you call it what you've called it, or even there's a yeah. book called The Chimp Paradox, which is brilliant
yeah.
at kind of identifying things. It just makes you step back and say, okay, see what's
yeah.
going on here.
Yeah.
But take me back to 27, 28. You say yeah. the shit really hit the fan. What was going on in your life then?
I kind of had, I guess, I mean, we talked about this earlier because you hate the term breakdown because it's like then, oh, you're broken.
Yeah.
And therefore you'll never be the same again. Although in my experience and in my opinion, it's the opposite. It couldn't make you still always anxiety, but it couldn't make you stronger, much better, more rounded, open, well-read human being. Mm-hmm. So I'm retrospectively grateful.
Yes.
Wouldn't want to do it again.
No,
hurry.
Same.
But I suppose I had two sort of breakdowns. Like I had one, which was in my earlier 20s when I first moved to London, and we were talking earlier about shoulding all over ourselves. Like, I shouldn't feel sad. I shouldn't feel anxious. I should have everything going for me. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But a denial, I had a real strong denial of the pressure I was under, putting myself under, and other people, but putting myself under. So I'd first moved to London. I'd built a great career in Ireland, and I moved to London. And I was still the terrified little girl who grew up on the farm, wrapped up in, I need to swan into these meetings and kill it and own it, and I'm going to run the world. And I was petrified, and I was putting a lid on that, because you shouldn't be scared, and you shouldn't need to go home, and you shouldn't feel lonely in a giant new city. Like, I look back, so I shoulded all over myself for about maybe longer than 6 months. I'd also never come up for air. I did Whistleblower, I did Raw, I did Single Handed, I did all these, particularly like Whistleblower and Single Handed, really emotionally deep, strong, dark TV shows. Mm. And I never thought that they should affect me. It shouldn't affect me. I should be fine. And I should be on to the next one. And I was so focused on that I never came up for air long enough between, because I was like, you can't let this ball drop, you know, you have to strike while the iron's hot, you have to work harder, I'm exhausted now.
Hearing that you had to go through that.
This is what I was doing to myself. Yeah. And so then I took all that with me to London and was like, now I need to go, you know.
Now you're like, you know, on another level.
Yeah. And now I have to keep at home still burning, but now I need to smash it over here. And I never give myself a break until I broke myself. And I remember going home for a New Year's Eve, and I went out with my boyfriend at the time, and we went out, and I remember the next day, something was just broken, I thought it was a hangover, you know, like the fear, mm-hmm. But it wouldn't go away, and it didn't go away for about, it started to recede about 4 months later.
Okay.
And
is it like anxious thoughts, anxious feelings?
Anxious thoughts, you know, like the interruptive thoughts, like the thought loops going nowhere, the sick stomach, like all of that, and like, what if I lose my mind? What if I never work again? What if this is it forever? What if I can't go back to London? What if I got re-triggered. What if you choke? I was like, okay. Then I went, okay.
Something's not right.
This is something else now. What is this? So I didn't know what it was. Didn't know what to do. But I went back to Monaghan. And I remember sitting in, it's now moved, but it was St. Davina's Hospital. And we always called it the mental.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm sitting in the mental. Again, anyone from Monaghan will laugh because we all go, oh, there's the mental. Trying to see I ended up seeing a psychiatrist. Now, what I needed was a psychologist. I now know this. Is what I needed, not for everyone, mm-hmm. because I needed to talk. Yeah. At that time, I didn't need meds. I needed to talk, and I would have, in a good way, unraveled stuff quicker. Yes. And he was not great. He basically, all he said was, well, yeah, you're not insane, although we don't like to use that word, which I know. He was like, but you're very obsessive. And I was like, you should see my bedroom. No shit. So anyway, work kind of actually put me back together.
And you talk about you were afraid of losing your mind. And for me, that was one of the biggest things. Like, you know, okay, you get your ducks back in a row work-wise, or whether maybe it's a toxic relationship, you get yourself out of that relationship, but you're still left with the anxiety.
Yeah.
And you're so desperate looking for something you can blame.
Yes,
and
we had this chat earlier
as well. It's like, if I can justify it, then it's not me. And when you can't, then it is just you. And then the fear of the fear, was that the most terrifying?
Oh, the fear of the fear, the anxiety about being anxious. I mean, the whole thing is a shit cycle. I had all of that. I had such a fear. What if I lose my mind? What if I go out on the street now? I mean, I now also learned that for me, 9 times out of 10, if a sentence starts with what if, it's very probable it's anxiety talking to me and nothing else rational. Mm-hmm. Because I weirdly cured, for now, any panic attacks because I let myself... Oh, breathing was one. What if I can't get a deep enough breath? Mm. That was something from teenage as well. I used to be like, I can't get right under the breath. So that time, with the breathing thing came in, the 24, whenever that was, I made myself go to the gym a lot. Now I was way too thin. And we always go, oh, secretly delighted. Yeah. Because, but I look, but I always know when I'm at a weight that I think is, I feel nice, I'm never happy.
Okay.
As in, it's an unhealthy, anxious weight. Because I remember that. I remember I'd won my IFTA. I was like thin. I was never more unhappy. So you're like, oh, so here's all the things you thought you wanted. You're at a great place in your work and you're absolutely stone cold miserable. So I was like,
how do you rationalize that then?
It's just a great lesson. Like that was I remember walking down the street in London and I'd won the IFTA and I'd won Outstanding Actress for a different series in France. And I was like, wow. So let's say you'd an Oscar now too. Would that make a difference? And I was like, no.
And did that make you question your work? Like that, you know, okay, obviously whether you have anxiety or not, going into acting by its nature is anxiety inducing because you're either on a job or you're unemployed.
It's so unbearable. Yeah.
So knowing that anxiety was an issue for you and then knowing that you were having success and still feeling this way, did it make you think, is this for me?
No, it made me think this, because before that, I was so young. Before that, I thought, when I get all these things, I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. So that's what it taught me.
That's such a common affliction.
Like, when I get, then I'll be happy, then I'll be all these things. And then I started to get a taste of having them, or certainly on the right road to getting them, and I was never more unhappy. So it was a wonderful lesson in humbling me. I don't think I was an ego dickhead before that. I really don't. You daren't be with my family. But it was just so humbling to go, you know, that's a nice, work hard and strive because you do enjoy your work. But know that it's not, you're going to have to go to bed with yourself at the end of every night. And that's the truth. But that was that one. I still didn't know it was anxiety.
Okay.
Because the man never said it. No one still pointed me in that direction. So I put myself back together, got back on the road, got back working, got out of that relationship. It wasn't the relationship's fault.
No.
But I did go through that as well during all that time, which wouldn't have helped. Big, big trigger. And then I mean, loads of anxiety waves, but not quite the down and out feeling. And then I was okay for a few years, I suppose. I was up and down and okay. And it's still that thing you can blame that you're in your 20s and you're not meant to know anyway, blah, blah, blah. And then I was now mid to late 20s, like 28, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I went to LA for the first time to try and do pilot season, and the shudding all over myself started all over again, and the pressure and the...
And what's that like when you're there? Are you having several auditions a
day? Well, pilot season, so it's like it could be 3 to 4 a day. I'm such a perfectionist, so if I do have a meeting, I want to know all my lines, I want to think about the character, I want to have read the script, I want to think about what she would wear. I mightn't be right, but I wanted to go, I want to do my best on every single one, even if it's not for me. I couldn't get my head around that they don't really do that in pilot season. Like, my manager kind of had to, because he didn't want to go, hey, you don't have to read every script.
Yeah.
Because that wouldn't be professional of him. But he was like, this girl's going insane. Mm. So I didn't know. And then I was trying to go, like, I should be able to just drive on the wrong side of the road. I should be able to just drive onto the Warner Brothers lot and go, hi, I've arrived. I should not take it personally that they don't shake hands or they don't want to hug you. Or it's not. And they're like, stand there, say that and leave. I was like, whoa. I was in a brand new relationship and he was going through so much grieving. So we were in a really intense environment and it was the last place he'd seen his father alive. I mean, there was so much going on.
It was a shit storm.
It was a shit storm. And I got through nearly a month of it. And
how did you get through? You just got up every day?
I remember, like, even trying to put something into sat nav and I couldn't type. And then I, like... the remote, like, there's like just putting something into sat nav and being frustrated you've got it wrong, and then they're trying to put something into sat nav and losing your mind. Like, you go, this isn't, your emotional reactions aren't quite on par with what they should be.
Yeah.
I think you might be stressed to the moon. I remember seeing the Hollywood sign and being, because I also, and actually I know millions of people in my industry who have this reaction, and my manager was like, your reaction is the, it's the rule, it's not the exception.
Mm-hmm.
Like, such high highs, like I'm like, I'm in Chateau Marmont and I'm having cocktails, what? I grew up on a farm.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, but now, and I'm hiking mountains, and I had an audition, and I remember like looking at my lipstick in the mirror, and for the first time ever behind me was the Hollywood sign, and I was like, how have I got here? Mm-hmm. Like, how did I get from a farm in the middle of rural Ireland, little home, to technically Hollywood, inverted commas?
And is it, you know, a lot of the time people have anxiety in trying to achieve success, but you were having success, and that was frightening you.
Yes.
Is it a fear of success?
Do you know what? I had a therapist say that there was, she said there's a part of you that is holding yourself back from success, so is that you don't, even though this isn't true, in your mind, so that you never lose your family.
Okay.
Which really, I was like, what?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Because if you go so seemingly
stratospheric,
the sentence that looped around my head in that first trip to LA was, far from this, you were reared.
Mm.
Like, I couldn't get out of my own way. That this could be for me. I could not bridge the gap between Charlene the actress and Charlene at home. And I could not find a world where these two could exist. Even though I'd go home and everyone was happy and everyone would be myself, I felt such a need to not lose the name that I, that I built up at home, and I better keep going. I mean, I was putting myself through torture. So anyway, I broke, got the stomach feeling again, went, there's that thing. There's that thing that happened to you 4 years ago in London. There's that thing when you can't eat, you can't sleep. The nerves are waking you up at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Oh, no, no. Oh, panic. Dig the heels in. Run. What's that thing? What's that thing? Is it this new relationship you're in? Maybe leave him. What is this? Get out of this town. So I remember ringing home. I remember walking these loops of this reservoir in Silver Lake, crying, talking to home, going, I don't know what's happening. And they were like, just come home. Just come home. Just come home.
And did you feel a great deal of shame in having to come to that point?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Because I was like,
You should be enjoying this.
I should be enjoying this. I should be having a great time. I should be like, yeah. And such weakness that you need to run home to mommy and daddy.
And how much of the anxiety at that point when you're in LA is coming from just you and, you know, the person that you are and how you've grown up and, you know, how your physiology performs? And how much of it is LA and, you know, the industry that you're in? Because we had this chat earlier again where I feel the nature of my work now means I can get away with being vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's what I do.
Yeah.
But is it, you know, you talk about the boundary between work Charlene and private Charlene, is it such a jump into this environment where, like, actors and casting directors, is no one showing any sign of vulnerability? Is everyone faking it, or is it really tough?
Certainly in LA, it felt like everyone was faking it. Now I think people maybe are coming more forward, but there's this weird... You have to walk this line, and I think other actors would agree with me, of going into a room and believing without a doubt, well, not without a doubt, but believing, you know, as Tommy Tiernan says, I'll probably win the fucking thing. Like, so you need to go in going, I can do this. I can play this part. I can nail this audition. I can use these nerves. I can push them down. And then being lovely and humble and normal as well. And it's really hard to believe you can win on that level.
That is so true.
While also, don't be a dickhead.
And it's such a conflict where I think it's such an Irish thing as well. It's yes. Where we're so concerned with seeming like decent, humble, grateful, self-deprecating people. But like you say, even like on a much smaller scale, like me coming over here trying to meet with editors and stuff, and I'm having to be like, you should meet me. I'm a number one best-selling author. But I'm
it's
also
not
like,
their nature.
I don't think I'm a dickhead. I'm a nice person.
Yes.
And even putting it out on social media, I'm afraid of, you know, if I put out that, like, here I am and I'm really confident, I always sort of bring it with, like, a caveat of, oh, but sure, it'll probably all go to shit.
Yes.
Because we mistake confidence for arrogance at home.
So much. Yeah.
And it's just this constant tension of, like, am I capable of... Sometimes I'm like, am I so stupid to think that I could impact in America on the self-help thing?
Just so... When you said that in your email to me about, oh, God, it's not easy trying to... As an Irish person, trying to promote yourself. I was like, oh, listen, you're preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
I don't know how to marry it all.
I know from, like, doing junkets and stuff myself back in the day when, you know, you'd interview someone and if you had a good conversation, you'd be like, oh, they were so nice.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a shock that they were a decent person.
Yeah.
You know, do you care what people think about you?
Yeah. Like, even doing this, you're going, do I sound like an asshole? I hope I don't sound stupid. Do I sound stupid? Don't sound, like, too mad. Do I sound like there's this auditor, this censor in your mind that never shuts the fuck up, and it's a good thing in a way. Like, even now I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have sworn.
Ah, don't worry.
No, but you know what I mean. this is like the marathons. And I think so many people are running the marathons, but they're just maybe, I shouldn't say better, but they're just maybe, I don't know, not as tuned in maybe.
Now that you are in a position where you're having these conversations, and I know you did some, you have spoken out about it before. Does that help? Are you more accepting of yourself now?
A wee bit more accepting, but I always find when I do these, like, later I'll have loads of anxiety about it.
Okay.
Like, I'll be like, does that go okay? And
you'll overanalyze.
I know, oh my God. My parents, from when I was a child, were like, stop overanalyzing, stop over. I was like, you might as well tell a cat to be a dog. Like, I've accepted.
And have you ever, I know you do a lot of therapy over here where it's just regular talking therapy, and I've done that myself, where I just kind of found that you're so aware of what you're feeling. You don't need someone to tell you what you're feeling, but what I found I needed was to say, okay, I know I'm feeling shit, I know I have anxiety, and I was talking around and around in circles. What I need is someone to say, what can I do about it?
Yeah.
So, like, for me, that's when I turned more so to cognitive behavioral therapy,
which
was, like, way more practical and scientific, and, like, what you're saying there, like, overanalyzing. And I'm thinking, well, what you need to do is, like, you know, write down your thoughts and decide, is what you're saying there, is that a fact or opinion?
Yes.
That kind of stuff that just helps you step back. So is that something that you've done?
I sort of started with CBT, and then with I have a very mixed feelings about it, but as someone who's not explored it like you have, whereas I felt like it was going to treat a symptom, and I wanted to get to the root of why this was. So I wanted to get to the root first. And so, I mean, I had a body worker therapist woman in London, and she's great, and she'll analyze whether, you know, your body or your mind or whatever. And she was like, says anyone listening to this? Yeah, she sure does. She was like, you need to talk. So it just depends, because I need to talk it all out, work it backwards. And when I find and go, that's because of that, something dissolves.
Yes, absolutely. And I think
awareness that, for me is key.
And I think the right kind of therapy brings a little bit of everything into it, where you're absolutely addressing the root cause. You're getting a clear picture of your childhood.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, okay, childhood, a lot of our shit goes back there, but what can we do about it now?
Yes.
So it's important to understand that, understand our lifestyle, what led us here, understand our kind of predispositions, understand how anxiety functions in the body and understand how stress can turn into anxiety. And then the CBT is, okay, what will I do now?
Yes, yeah.
So I think there's definitely, it's important to not just, you know, ask the questions, why am I this, but what you have to address it as well.
So I'm like such a, I have to, so I'm like, right, so I'm going to go right back to there. And so then at two, I blah, blah, blah. So that I understand everything. So then I need to understand everything. And then now I've done all that. And now I'm like, okay, you don't live there. You just, as you said, you just know that. And you go, well, that's the reason why. But that doesn't mean, you're like, that's the reason why I feel that way. Mm-hmm. But I still feel that way. So now what am I going to do about it? So for me, starting to notice awareness and patterns or things to look out for that might like trigger or whatever. And then, I mean, the boring stuff like the, I won't really have more than one coffee a day.
Oh yeah, well I don't have any coffee.
Yeah, I can't, one, in my, and I, you know, that happened mid-nervous breakdown in LA. It's actually a funny story. I went in and I was a wreck. I was like, but still, because it was only after LA that someone was like, you have anxiety. I look back and go, no shit.
Yeah.
No one told me. I didn't know. And it wasn't as everywhere then, because this is going back now, like 7, 8 years ago, and like 10 years ago to the first time. And I was like, can I get a coffee? It's just one shot. And he was like, we don't do that here. And I was like, what? And he's like, we don't do that here. And I was like, you don't? I was like, such a, I was like, just one, just put one shot. And he's like, it's a two shot. And I was like, yeah, but you could throw one of them away. Like, I'll pay for it. I don't want to drink it. And he was like, ma'am. And I was like, what is going on? And I was like, just one shot. I just want one shot. And he's like, his bottom line, what was he said? I was like, so you're telling me that it comes out in two shots and you can't pour half of that down the sink with me paying for it. His bottom line was, we prefer not to do that here.
Oh my God.
And I
God.
Was like, you know what? You give me whatever you think I should drink. And I took it, and then I went outside and I threw it in the bin and I cried in the car. Like,
that was just the straw that broke the camel's back,
like,
for you.
Why you have to go home? I can't do this.
And so, how do you approach it now? So obviously you just posted a while ago about the Peaky Blinders news, and it's a huge, I'm presuming a very huge big deal for you.
Yeah,
Do you go into these scenarios now feeling like, I deserve to be here, I've worked for this, or do you go in thinking, oh Jesus, am I going to be found out? What is your...
Both. I have a real mix of... I know I can absolutely do the job. That I have a weird belief in.
That's great.
I hope I don't sound like an asshole.
You don't?
I have a weird belief that I know I can do the job. But look, but this is classic, and it's only now I know what was happening. So I was like, oh, I can, no, I can do that. I can do that well. I can do my damn best. And everyone seems to be happy. And you go in, mixed with, God, I really hope I don't make a balls of this, and they don't, because Peaky was a weird, you know, you work your ass off on auditions, and you get down to twos, down to threes, and you get, especially in America, there's no feedback, everyone knows, you send tapes off into Mars. And then Peaky was just a cold offer. I didn't even have to... I'm like, wow. The show I admire the most... What? Has just offered... Incredible. But now I know it was anxiety. So I did it. And I'm doing it. And I'm...
You're in the middle of filming it right now.
Yeah. No, it's wrapped. It's all done. But I get this... I decide to get this thing into my head all of a sudden. And my friends have this... Where I go, what if I... What if, see?
Mm-hmm.
What if I can't remember lines anymore? Oh my God, the stomach went. And it's only now I look back and go, because what I have an amazing ability to do is take huge things in my stride. Like, oh, that I can do. Yeah, absolutely. I'll do
little
things. I'll go smash that. And I won't be... Because you can only let yourself take in the hugeness of the situation so much. Because if you let it all in, you won't be able to do it.
You won't get up out of
the
bed.
And you need to make it small, because at the end of the day, everyone's human. And what does it all mean in 400 years anyway? Yeah. No one cares. So there's all of that going on. So then I'll take it all in my stride and go, so it's just another TV show.
It's a job.
Some people don't even watch it.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, some of the greatest actors that you admire more than Ellen. You know? So what? And I'll go and do all that, and then I'll get these weird things like that. Because I remember I was going to Geneva then after I filmed to my friend's house, and I was so unbelievably anxious I couldn't work out how to get a taxi. But it was after I'd filmed. And I'm like, see, that's what I... It's I go, like, there's what you do.
Yeah, so your body was like... being there for you and getting you through it.
Yeah.
And then after, it's like, I always say it's like at Christmas time when you stop working and you get the flu.
Yes.
And your body's like, oh, now that you're free, I'm going to fuck you up and you're going to be sick for 2 weeks.
That's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like. And I had the same thing. I was like, you're in Geneva. You've just done Peaky Blinders. You should feel so, but it's there's all this shit going on.
are you starting to like accept this part of you, or
I'm still shudding all over myself.
So do I, though. But you recognise it, and maybe you say, "I know what that is."
Yeah, like when I read your article in Glamour, I was like, "Oh, she gets that too." Oh, because the shudding thing is a newish discovery of mine, where I just won't allow myself the feelings because they're unbearable if you've no reason, and it sounds so. I have a major thing of you're so spoiled. You're so spoiled. You're so spoiled. That's all that's wrong with you, is you're spoiled. And it's like, because I'm like, well, it's a sunny day, you should feel happy. Mm. Or it's, you've got a great meeting, you should feel, I'm like,
but sometimes, I mean, Jesus. It literally can just come down to, like, hormones. Like, we talked about cortisol and stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
The cortisol in your body doesn't care how fortunate you are. It doesn't care that you're in New York City. It doesn't care that the sun is shining.
Yes.
It doesn't care who you're working with next. Yeah. That's, someone that you thought was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a physiology thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't discriminate.
But anxiety is a master at talking you out of all that rationale.
I know.
I mean, it's a master. And it's a master in, for me, it's a master in disguise. And it's a chameleon in how it presents.
Mm.
Because once you crack away, like I remember cracking the breathing thing so far and going, Sophie, so stop breathing. So, all right, go for it. And the anxiety all receded because it didn't get that physiological reaction.
You stopped resisting it.
Because I was like, go nuts. Go out. Go on. Because like, what if I go outside and I just go insane? And then something in my logical head went, go for it.
Yeah.
Go fucking knock yourself out. Go bananas out there. And then it just recedes.
I know.
You're like, oh.
That's for me, like when I stopped having panic attacks was when I was like, come at me, like do your worst.
Do come for me.
Like I will writhe around on the floor.
Yeah,
whatever. Nothing I can't handle.
Yeah,
and when I stopped fearing that happening, it stopped happening.
Me too. Exact same on that one. I still have anxiety, but that particular beast.
Yeah, it's more the anxiety these days is more, you know, waves and thoughts.
Yeah.
And like while I've been here, I've obviously I was building up quite a lot coming here, and I was putting it out there on social media, which is another. We don't even have time to get into the anxiety on social media. And then when I was here, I was like, oh, you know,
I
felt like my chest was tight, my breathing was a little bit labored. Yeah. And then I'm thinking, oh, you're obviously anxious. And then it starts to kind of spiral. And you're like, no. Okay, I'm going to feel anxious probably for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Because you don't just acknowledge it and then it goes.
No.
Which is really tough.
Yeah.
And let it be there.
Yeah.
Here you are.
Yeah.
Do your thing.
Yeah.
I understand why. And eventually it will be like, oh, she's not fucking paying us any attention. Yeah. Just go.
Yeah. It's exactly what it's like.
I know.
It's exactly that. I'm the exact same. Where you go, mine is, I get really horrible, like, and they're all different depending on what works, what wouldn't really kicks the old cortisol up a notch, is like obtrusive thoughts or thought loops going really quick to just go, and I'm like, so I'll get those. And they could be anything. They could make no sense. Like, they could be so dark. Or that, like, what if I eat that sweet and I choke? But as long as the anxiety gets the physiological response, that thought will work. So it's like, we got it. Give her that one again. I don't know, we sound like lunatics, so I don't know if this is sending this out up in the brain. Although Ruby Wax talks about it in her book, that there is a thing going, because it's the neural pathway has been opened. So
it's like,
send that down that neural pathway again. It's very hard to close that road off. And so once you can find one that works, like a thought that works, it'll trigger that thought and it'll go, oh, there we go. And the minute that one no longer serves, I'll get another one that might work. Mm-hmm. And it'll keep trying stuff. And it depends on how vulnerable you are, what's going on then in real life outside of that. Like sometimes I have to, and again, you feel shame. Like sometimes I'm like, I can't watch a certain TV show right now because something in it might stick with me and it'll just torture me.
I had that where I remember...
Newspaper, the news.
Yeah, I remember watching my Barry at one time put on the movie Side Effects, and it was about like mental illness, and I was so fragile that I was like, I will literally catch whatever they're talking about in
exactly
movie.
No, I'll catch up. I don't want to see something and get it into my head.
But you have to, but that's okay, and you have to just say like, I'm just going to pull down the blinders or the shield, my mom calls it the heat shield, and just like protect yourself. So before I have to go, and I would just love to chat to you for so long, before we go, is there any one thing that you feel like you've really learned that people should know in your journey with anxiety that they can take forward with them, or that you will remind yourself of daily?
It depends. I mean, so many, but like for me, admitting that I have it and that that's okay, and that that's a part of me, and that that's okay. Stop beating myself up about it.
It doesn't define
and
you.
Stop it, and that it doesn't, and that it's helped me. And that was the final thing I was going to say about the thoughts. What I now do is I treat them and try to treat them as a gift, because I go, you're anxious about something. What's wrong? And maybe it's nothing.
Yeah.
But have a look. Anything wrong? Anything? Are you pushing? Are you doing anything?
It's a warning.
And then if there's
system.
Not, then I'm like, all right, you're just a bit all right. Maybe you didn't sleep good. Maybe it's hormones.
Yeah.
But that, to treat them, for me, the thoughts, the horrible thoughts, as a gift of a ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Something's trying to knock you on the shoulder and go, hey, I'm feeling a bit...
Yeah, exactly. Like, your body is trying to protect you. It's trying to communicate with you that something's maybe a little bit too much. And it's only when you start to work with that rather than against it that you can start to, like, own it, own your anxiety.
Yeah.
It's the hardest lesson to learn, but it sounds like you have learned it, and you just need, going forward, you need to just be a little bit nicer to yourself.
Definitely be nicer to
me. You're doing amazing.
Unbelievably hard on myself. I'm like, oh, it's unbearable. And for me, admitting it and talking to people. I mean, talking's not for everyone.
Yeah.
I absolutely understand that. But it helped me just in leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
To have someone, because I had a therapist say that, you know, about, she's like, she admitted it, which is rare. She was like, there's times I can't watch the news. I have a very, very stressful job. And I can't follow. So to try and, like, if I want to watch 4 episodes of Queer Eye, to not give myself a hard time that I should be watching something hyper intelligent,
you should be meditating.
I should be meditating. I'm like, you just do what you need to do that works.
Absolutely, Charlene. Thank you.
Thank you so
much.
Much.
I've loved our chat.
I know, we could do part 2.
Yes,
part
we will.
3. Part 4. We'd have a series.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with 2 friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access a full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.